listening to WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties and beyond.
You're listening to the three extra web streams available at wavefarm.org/listen or WGXC.org, any WGXC.org page. Click on the Listen button. Hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, or the test site of Acoustic Commons. Live weather you can hear on your radio anytime you want at WGXC.org or wavefarm.org/listen. Hear the hydrophones in the Wave Farm Pond in Zach Poff's Pond Station, microphone outside in the woods at Wave Farm in the test site of Acoustic Commons, and hear a live stream of an analog drone synthesizer playing the weather, the changes in precipitation, the changes in sunlight, the changes in wind, and the changes in temperature. At wavefarm.org/listen, you can hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, and the test site of Acoustic Commons. On any WGXC.org page, click on the Listen button to tune in your weather.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Rhodes Adler of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by MPAC, presenting Decommission, a series of three events featuring film and video, live performance from choreographer Dana Michelle, and a talk with artist Constantina Zavitsanos, October 2nd through October 8th on the campus of RPI in Troy, New York. More information can be found at mpac.rpi.edu.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Home Songs number 3 with me, Dave Evans. I'm broadcasting from South Liverpool, in the north of England, in the UK, and it's great to be here on WGXC 90.7 FM. What we were just listening to then was the sound of the electromagnetic fields generated by a bunch of devices in the corner of the room that I'm currently sat in. And alongside that, I was singing along with those fields generated by those devices. There were a couple of mains plug sockets there in there somewhere, a screen, and what was happening there was that those sounds were getting fed into a Raspberry Pi that was running pure data, and each of those different sounds from these devices was being converted into randomly played at different volumes. And what this is all about, really, and what the whole show today is about, is about thinking about the voice, but not the human voice. The voice as it can appear from different things and places, and how we can think about the voice as the product of a system of things coming together. My interest in the voice really only started very recently. And it started really with an artwork that I came across via a book. And that artwork was Ragnar Kjartansson's The Visitors, which is an installation, an hour-long film across 9 screens, and in it a bunch of musicians all sat playing in different rooms in a 19th century house in upstate New York, are playing a song together, and I'm gonna play a clip of The Visitors now, so you can hear what it sounds like. So this is a clip from The Visitors by Ragnar Kjartansson. So that was The Visitors, part of an artwork by Ragnar Kjartansson, and it was, as I said before, it was a result of 9 Icelandic musicians playing together in a mansion in upstate New York. Owned by the Astor family, and it's a very bohemian scene, people sitting in baths playing guitars, and it just looks like another world. And as an artwork, you know, reading about it, it sounds like a very powerful piece of work. You know, it moves people to tears and one thing and another, which is amazing, and it is clearly very beautiful, but when I was looking at the visitors and these nine musicians in this very bohemian setting, it did make me think, oh, you know, that doesn't really look like the world that I live in. And if my home were to produce music, then it wouldn't probably sound like that, to be honest. So it's from that point, really, that I started to think about the sounds of the home and the sounds that get made in the home. And over the space of a couple of years, I started doing some broadcasts, which were the sounds of my home. And because I have two young children, I tended to do these very late at night after they'd gone to bed. And because I had very little energy, I would do things like attach a contact mic to the washing machine and broadcast the sounds of me washing some school uniforms, or the sounds of the fish tank. And I would announce these little broadcasts on Instagram or wherever, and people would tune in or not tune in. I don't think the audience was ever particularly big for these little ad hoc broadcasts, but I kind of enjoyed doing it. It was a way to connect to the outside world during a period where I was kind of quite isolated looking after my children. And I did this for a couple of years. And as I say, the results didn't sound much like the visitors, that's for sure. And a lot of these broadcasts are now archived online at peripheries.cc. So you can navigate to there and have a look at them and listen to them. And I enjoyed doing it and did it for a couple of years, but I did eventually decide to take a break and stop to think about what it was I was actually producing by doing these ad hoc broadcasts. Because what was happening, it wasn't really music. And to prevent me from kind of waffling on for too long, I am going to now play a bit of music made by people who have genuinely engaged with the home and the sounds that it makes to create something amazing. This is Matt Moss and a track from their album Ultimate Care 2, which was made entirely using their washing machine in their basement. So this is the first track from Ultimate Care 2. I'm out. Again, quite an incredible piece of music there by Matt Moss. But again, if I'm honest, as a reflection of my living situation with my children, the situation is seldom that coherent, quite frankly, at home. And the idea that I could kind of marshal the sounds of the domestic space in the way that Matt Moss did to produce something as coherent as what we've just listened to, it would be slightly disingenuous to me. So during this period of time that I took off to try and decide what it was that I was actually doing by making these broadcasts, I started to do a little bit of research into different metaphors for sound, I suppose. You know, I was looking at, was I making noise? Is it a form of radio? I had kind of decided it wasn't music. And I happened across a webpage that showed the vocal system, the human vocal system. And the human vocal system is made up of the different models of it, but this one that I saw, you have the respiratory subsystem, which is the lungs, and then you have the phonatory system, which is the voice box, and then you have the resonatory system, which is the tongue and the teeth and the lips. And I was really excited by the idea that all of these different things could come together to produce this voice. And the voice wasn't a singular thing, it was a thing made up from lots of different parts. So it made me begin from that point on, which was only last December, I started to think, well, maybe could the house have a voice? You know, could a space, because it feels very much like a particular system where lots of things are working together, could it be a vocal system? And then, you know, the more you think about it, the more you know, other things get to have voices. We are kind of chatting more and more to things like Siri and Alexa. So with that, I think I'll break for some more music. And what I'm going to play now is Alexa's theme, which is a song that Alexa, the Amazon voice assistant, will sing to you given the right prompt. So here's Alexa.
Hey there, glad you stopped by. I'm your virtual assistant, your cloud-based AI. I can help you with a thing or two anytime your game. Get organized or be surprised, just say my name. I've got timers, reminders, alarms, lists, Bluetooth calls and messages, jokes, songs, stories, games, weather, search and Easter eggs. Get the news, crank some tunes, hear the score, wait, there's more. Link me to your calendar, I won't lead you astray. I'm here to save the day. I can bust a rhyme. Call me anytime. Hey there, glad you stopped by. I'm your virtual assistant, your cloud-based AI. I can help you with a thing or two anytime your game. Get organized or be surprised, just say my name. I've got timers, reminders, alarms, lists, Bluetooth calls and messages, jokes, songs, stories, games, weather, search and Easter eggs. Get the news, crank some tunes, hear the score, wait, there's more. Link me to your calendar, I won't lead you astray. I'm here to save the day. I can bust a rhyme. call me anytime.
So that was the Alexa's theme by Alexa, the voice of Amazon's virtual assistant, which was the identity of the actual person who voiced Alexa was meant to be kept a secret, but it was eventually found out that it was a Colorado-based voiceover artist called Nina Roll. And so if we think that, you know, the voices that we're hearing are increasingly synthetic or non-human advances in voice cloning have come a long way. So, you know, I was interested in this idea of what gets to have a voice and what gets to speak or sing. So that really kind of has triggered a new phase in my research and artwork, really, in my practice. And that's kind of what this show is about. If it's a show, it's a kind of way of exploring the non-human voice, you might call it, and thinking about what it means to give things voice or allow things to speak that are traditionally kept silent. And that's one thing that really kind of jumped out at me when I started doing these broadcasts of me engaged in domestic labour late at night or in the afternoon before my children came home from school, was that the soundscape, the domestic soundscape, is by design very quiet. The kitchen is a room of its own, and the devices in it are made to be as silent as possible. But the reality of family life, especially my family life, is that things are not quiet. Things are leaky, and they kind of refuse to be quiet and stay in the background, like I think traditionally domestic labour is meant to. So kind of the research that I was doing was looking at kind of who gets to make noise, and obviously working with these appliances, I started using different sensors to bring out the different sounds that they could make. If they weren't going to make sounds through, you know, audible sounds, then I had to kind of dig into the vibrations that they were making or the field, the electromagnetic fields that they were generating or the radio waves that they were emitting. So I've ended up making lots of broadcasts with routers and mains supply sockets and dripping taps and vibrating fridges. And what I started to do was think about how I could give something a voice. And that one of the earliest experiments that I did at home in the kitchen was that I bought a vocoder pedal. I know nothing about the voice. I'm a real kind of newcomer to this field. But when the vocoder guitar pedal arrived, I realised that you have a mic that goes in one input and then a guitar that goes into another input. And the voice through the mic gets tuned to the frequency or the pitch of the notes coming through the guitar. So I thought, what if I take, instead of using a guitar, what if I use the sound of the fridge? And what if, instead of using a human voice, what if I take an existing vocal track from a song? So then the voice will then be set to the pitch of the washing machine. And the first experiment that I did used a Hawkwind song, which was kind of a peculiar choice. I'm not a massive fan of Hawkwind, but I was searching for songs about machines, and I came across this Hawkwind song called Lord of Light, which is based on a science fiction novel by Roger Zelazny, and it kind of fit the bill. So I used AI to separate the vocal track and plugged it all into the vocoder, and this is the result. So that was a kind of a duet between our washing machine here in Liverpool and the vocalist from Hawkwind, Dave Brock, I think it was at that time. And that was my first kind of rudimentary attempt at trying to get objects to sing or to produce some sort of voice. It was an interesting experiment, but I think ultimately it didn't really push the right buttons for me. What I'm trying to express, I think, through creating these broadcasts, these sounds, is a sense of something very rich and complex and almost magical that happens in the most mundane of situations. The places that you go to when you're really, really bored or really, really tired can be really quite, like I say, quite rich and complex. So I think what I'm trying to do, I've since realised, is to literally articulate that complexity and that richness that comes out of these spaces of very mundane activity by thinking, you know, the idea that something might be, I could articulate that, you know, articulation feels like a feature of the voice. So, you know, while that Hawkwind experiment was kind of fun, it didn't, you know, it wasn't really doing what I wanted it to do. And not long after I made that, I went on a residency to a great place in Bristol called Watershed. And I spent a couple of months there kind of just thinking about how to make what constitutes a voice and the type of voice that I was interested in. And I started looking at Pure Data, which is like a visual programming language, to create kind of, well, to harmonise the sounds that were coming out of some of these devices, and to duplicate them, shift the pitch, and create something that was a bit kind of denser and richer. And this is really where I think the work that I was doing started to achieve something for me anyway. So what I'm going to play next is a recording that I made in Bristol, I think in March. And what we're listening to is a router and a portable fan, I think. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was a few different things harmonized together to create that which I'm beginning to kind of consider to be a sort of a song sung by a bunch of different things in a particular place. And through this the ongoing research, you know, when you start looking at the voice, you very quickly realize that, you know, there are two ways of thinking about the voice as something that is engaged with symbolic language and something more expressive that doesn't necessarily rely on that language, which is, I guess, can be song. And so I kind of moved more towards thinking about singing together, or voices working together. So looking at choirs and things like that, but also trying to branch out this research and looking at kind of polyvocal arrangements and where they occur in different places and cultures. And I read some interesting research that more authoritarian societies elevate the singular voice in song, whereas more egalitarian societies engage in more communal song, polyvocal activity. And I was listening to a really amazing 30-part BBC radio documentary called Noise, A Human History, and there was a particular snippet of it that caught my attention that I'd like to play for you now.
These are the Bayaka pygmies of the rainforests of the Central African Republic, in a recording held at the Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford. The men are chanting and drumming as they get ready for a net hunt, while choirs of women weave shimmering webs of polyphonic sound to entice the forest spirits to dance and bless the hunt. Those dressed as the spirits also harangue the hunters in their falsetto voices when their rhythms don't quite come together. Sing better, drum better, and you will eat tomorrow. There's lots of information in these sounds, but what's being created is coordination and mutual trust, the individual giving way to the group. What we're also hearing is entrainment, when different rhythms start to interact and then synchronize. It's listening to music and starting to tap our feet in time. It's a group of soldiers adjusting their pace to march in unison. It's an individual bodily rhythm being subsumed into a collective rhythm.
So that was the Bayaka, really beautiful kind of example of communal kind of polyvocalization, where everyone is engaged in an activity and using the voice. And it made me kind of think about what I'd been doing, setting up various sensors around the house and doing these live broadcasts, and maybe starting to consider them as a kind of a way of pushing back against the isolation of the, you know, domestic space, and to kind of entrain myself to the noises and the devices and the objects that are all around me that are kind of silenced, or designed to be quiet anyway. And I'm sort of thinking about the results of this polyvocal assemblage of devices, kind of all making the sounds together and coming together in this, what I'm beginning to think of as song. And thinking, it's not a choir, that's for sure. It's something a little bit more unrestrained, perhaps. And while I was continuing to research, I came across a really interesting clip on YouTube of a group of women marching onto Parliament Square in London during the 1980s from a camp that was campaigning against the presence of nuclear weapons in the UK. And these were women, and they were undertaking something which has been described as keening. So I'm going to play you the audio from that YouTube clip now. So that was the women of Greenham Common marching onto Parliament Square in 1984. And that has been described, as I say, as keening, which is a traditional form of vocal lament for the dead. And the women of Greenham Common were mourning the future deaths of children from the perceived, very real threat of nuclear annihilation. And I kind of enjoyed the rawness of that. And as a kind of a polyvocal coming together, and that's not to say that, you know, the devices that are making the sounds and the resulting song has that same character of lament. I'm not sure what the character of it is, but I know that I enjoy the density of it and the complexity of it. And I think one of the key things that I'm kind of enjoying with this work and thinking about voice in general is the liveness of it and the unpredictability of working with devices and machines to create these really quite unpredictable assemblages, which, you know, with a bit of a stretch, you could begin to think of as voices, because that is kind of where it is a good reflection of where I'm at. You know, I've chosen to make my work about domestic space, and you know, if you go into Google image search and look at kitchen, the results that come back to you are of something very well organized and very clean, very tidy. But you know, the majority of people's lives aren't like that. They're complex. These domestic spaces are, you know, they are rich. All the important things in our lives happen in these spaces, and the sounds that they make kind of have that, it feels fitting that they have that kind of unpredictability and that density to them. So I'm kind of enjoying thinking about the voice and the non-human voice and what the voice of a space or a place might sound like. And I'm going to leave you with another recording from last week where I am singing along with a bunch of different devices in my home, some mains, power supply sockets, and a screen. It's been really nice to be able to share these snippets of sound and research with you all. And hopefully I'll be back soon with more explorations into the non-human voice. Thanks for listening.